Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Now, most of us know, without really giving it much thought, that having a baby is going to change your life. And many pregnant couples devour the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. And if I'm honest, when I was pregnant with my first child, I read that book too. But the problem with that book and a lot of other information out there is that it's really not complete. Now, I remember, you know, you read all this stuff and they talk about labor and, you know, what it'll be like and it'll hurt and this and that and the other, but you don't really know what it's like until you're smack dab in the middle of it. And I would argue that the same thing is true about you really don't know how much your life is going to change when you have a baby. You'll know that you're going to be tired for a while. Actually, that's exhausted, not just tired. And you know that the baby will take a lot of time and attention. But there are some things you just cannot know. You probably aren't going to be 100% sure how to calm the baby or maybe even how to feed it properly and appropriately. Sometimes you don't know how you're going to feel when it's time for you to go back to work. You don't recognize how isolating staying at home with the baby can be. And you may not even be aware of how much time you spent either by yourself doing your own thing or with your partner. And suddenly you've got this third person that's taking all your time. And most of us marry with the idea of providing a stable environment for our children. But there's very little out there about how to prepare your marriage for when baby makes three. So joining me today to talk about what prospective parents need to focus on in order to protect their marriage once they bring home baby is Marnie Feuerman. She's a licensed clinical social worker and marriage and family therapist. She's also the current marriage expert and content contributor for the website about.com. And she writes articles for Your Tango, and she's also answers questions as an expert for Dr. Oz's ShareCare.com. So, Marnie, thank you so much for coming and talking about this really important topic.
Sure, Leslie. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, part of the reason why I called you is because, you know, I do a lot of reading about all kinds of stuff because I want my listeners and my clients to know how to do marriage well. Because I know you're a licensed marriage family therapist. I am too. And we have the information. It's just really hard to disseminate. And you recently had a piece at about.com on 5 not-so-obvious ways a marriage changes after a new baby. And I read this and I thought, yes, especially 3 out of the 5. Not that all 5 aren't important, but hopefully we'll get to all 5. But the ones I want to talk about are the self-doubt, the boundary blow-ups, and here's this one, spousal spurning, which for marriage is really appropriate. So which one would you like to tackle first?
Right. Well, we could start with the self-doubt because that's the thing that I think I even could relate to the most. I had twins.
Me too.
So,
Oh, bless you. Okay.
Talk about, I mean, even a bigger shock to the system. But what was funny is, and you know, my husband also read the article, and he laughed out loud at that part because we're both well-educated. We're good at our jobs. We're competent. We're independent. You know, we're strong people. And then as soon as our babies came home, we were lost. He especially was like saying things like, I'm not even sure I remember how to change the diaper because they had taught, we went to a class, they taught how to change a diaper. So there was a panic, particularly I think even the night before I had a scheduled C-section. And so that night, I just think we were such a bundle of nerves. And then, you know, at the end of that little, you know, part of the article with the other therapist Lisa Ryan that I quoted, she says the new baby is the head of is the new head of household, and that is
absolutely
so true.
And well, yeah,
and you're turning
everything
upside down.
Means. Yeah, right. We don't even know what that means.
Right, right. Well, I think you have a sense of control generally in your life, and things are pretty well scheduled, and you know you'll eventually get there. But at first, I just think the adjustment and figuring out what's what and when you do what and how you do it and how you get sleep and how you eat and how you feed the baby and the times you do all those things, and just there's so much going on and so many moving parts. I just think it takes quite a while to settle in and get your routine and have that calm again. And I think even if you can conceptualize it, nothing's like actually feeling it and going through it. I remember somebody telling me, like, when I was pregnant, I think I was having some of the conversations with people who have kids. You're like, what's it like? You start talking about it. And I remember someone saying to me, you can't ever prepare. You know, you can talk about all you want, but you just can't ever prepare. And it didn't even sink in then, like how true that was.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that's why you said, you know, people, we have this general idea. I mean, we know our lives are going to change. But, I mean, I was like you. I was older. I was 33 when my son was born, and I remember them taking me out of the hospital. You know, I'm in the wheelchair with this baby in my arms. I'm thinking, oh, my God, how do you know I can take care of this baby? You know, it's like, where was the test I was supposed to take? I mean, and I was like you. I had gone through the pre-birth classes and all that kind of stuff, which I'm not even sure they do anymore, which I think is actually even worse because now people are completely unprepared. And I remember when my son was little, I remember telling my husband that he could not leave the house to go to work until I had taken a shower.
Right.
And I was there too. It's like when the baby was sleeping, it's like, do I eat? Do I sleep?
What do you do? Right. When you actually have some time that's yours, you know, it's sort of hard to prioritize everything.
And so
yes,
I
all those things.
But I think this self-doubt, and I know we're talking about bringing home babies, but I think this self-doubt is part and parcel of, I was talking a couple weeks back with Vicki Larson. I don't know if you know who she is, but she writes for the Huffington Post. And she wrote this piece.
Yeah, I think I've read her stuff.
She wrote this piece about mothers abandoning their children. And so I was having a conversation with her about the wars that go on between stay-at-home moms versus working outside the home moms, and just moms in just this whole thing in general about what does it mean to be a good parent. And you know, we now have the free-range parenting versus the helicopter parenting, and I'm wondering if it all stems from this self-doubt that you were talking about.
It could definitely be a piece of it, and I think because we're so overwhelmed with a lot of information on the internet, we get overloaded with it, and then we are confused because a lot of it's conflicting, and then we're not sure if what we're doing is right. And sometimes I think the antidote is to just kind of say, I've got to find my way, and sometimes I'm going to mess up. As perfect as you try to be, we all want to be perfect parents. We all want to be the best moms and do it right, and you will do a lot right because your heart's there, your intention is there. But there's some things that one day I think your kid's going to grow up and say, I didn't like this. And you're going to have no idea because you thought you were doing everything right. So I think people have to really cut themselves
a little
slack. Yeah.
Well, yeah, really. It's funny. I'm laughing because I just recently found out my son is about to graduate from college. So he's 22 years old. And not terribly long ago. Now, I used to think I was really clever because in the morning I would fix him and his sister scrambled eggs in the microwave. And I only, for when they were in middle school and high school, and well, not in high school, mostly middle school. And I just recently found out they hated them. And I said, well, why did you guys tell me this?
And you thought, I'm giving my kids a nutritious breakfast. I'm a great mom.
And it's faster than me, you know, standing at the stove, scrambling the eggs. I'm going, oh, my gosh. And I do sometimes want to tell him, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. You were my guinea pig. I didn't know what I was doing.
Wow, very funny. That's true. They are kind of our guinea pigs in a way. But I think, you know, people do have to have some confidence And you know, stuff is, that you're going to read out there, it's either going to resonate with you or it's just not, and you're going to just kind of toss it aside. And I think some of the stuff is really good. And if you can read some of the parenting materials that are, you know, based in the research, that's kind of my thing more. Like, I want to see something that has some research behind it, not just someone who is just kind of has a big personality, and so what they say you tend to believe, but someone who's really solid. And I think there's some good stuff out there, but ultimately people have to be, just cut themselves that slack. They really do.
Well, and I do think that one of the other problems when we bring home our babies, and this happened to be the case with my son because he was born 2 weeks before he was supposed to be born, so, and my husband and I lived away from all family members, and so nobody was there. I mean, I went to the doctor's office, and they basically said, you're going to the hospital and having a baby. I'm like, no. And so when we bring them home, we used to have moms, aunts, cousins, grandmas, all right there to help us. And now a lot of times people are like me, where for 2 weeks it was me and my husband.
Yeah, that's hard, and not everybody can afford help. And I think sometimes they've got it better in other countries where they do that, that's considered a priority, and even the government helps with it. But here, there's a lot of times people are on their own, or they don't live near family, or there's just not that mentality. People are sort of doing their own thing, and it's not that sense of community when somebody has a baby, and that, I think, creates a really big challenge, because I think the more support you can get, whether it's friends, family, anyone that sort of comes to help you with that new baby, you're going to do so much better. You're going to feel so much more relieved. And then you also have people who can ask, who may have experience with kids, because that's another piece of it. Other moms, they'll know what to do, and they'll calm you. You know, so it's hard when that's not around. So that's true.
Right. And so I think that's something that expectant couples can probably do before baby comes, is to try and get that support system. Other, friends who've had babies, siblings who've had babies, people who can actually go, okay, yes, you are not crazy. This is really happening.
Yes.
And the more important point is something you said earlier, this will pass.
Right.
And
nothing will be like those first few months. And yet you do have to remember that.
Well, and I think it's hard because, as I tell people, it only takes 60 to 90 days for a new behavior to become a habit. And I don't care how precocious your child is, at 60 or 90 days, they still can't take care of themselves. All those habits that you get into, is there an end date in sight? I mean, I remember reading, now he's somebody who is old school, and I actually like him, but he's not for everybody, is somebody named John Rosemond. And I was reading one of his books, and he said something about teaching your children to take care of themselves, because what's cute at 2 is not cute at 22. So, but we don't. Our children will grow up. They will change. And here's the thing that parents have to realize: we have to change with them.
Right.
Which can always...
That is true.
Which can always be a challenge.
Right. You're not going to be the same person before as you are after kids. You're not. And this, I think, even more so for women. I think that's the biggest transformation that they go through when they become a parent.
Well, and I know that one of the biggest... I don't know if it's a... challenge. Well, making the decision, I think, is a challenge as to whether or not somebody returns to work. I always, people talk about, I've had moms who've been, stay-at-home moms, and they say they don't work. I said, oh, yes, all mothers work. It's just whether or not you get paid for it.
Right.
And that decision of staying home with the child or not staying home, and I think that that's something that people talk about before they have the child. But they don't understand until that child is actually here how that's going to play out. So my suggestion for most couples is to have a little bit of flexibility around that if financially possible.
Right. And you don't know how you're going to feel. I mean, I know moms who've intended to go back to work.
Right.
But then they decide, I can't. I just can't leave this baby. Or I can't leave the baby with a stranger or in daycare. And they change
right.
their minds.
Which can cause some severe issues
yes.
in the marriage if
yes.
that's not, and that's why I say, you know, I think
mm-hmm.
that it would be helpful for couples to have some flexibility that this might be what we're planning, but going back to what to expect when you're expecting, and they talk about having a birth plan, because pretty much it's like, okay, have this
mm-hmm.
birth plan and then be prepared to throw it out.
Exactly.
I think it's the same thing when we bring home baby is, yes, you've got this great plan,
mm-hmm.
but you need to be prepared that that may not go the way it's supposed to go.
Right, right. I agree, and I think that's a good discussion to have, and I think, you know, like anything, all of these issues, I think the stronger the foundation is for with your marriage, and the more you talk about all of these issues and concerns and fears, I think the better off you'll be when the baby comes. And some of these things you have to talk about even before you get pregnant, you know, the what if. Like, what if all of a sudden
yes.
I see the baby and I say, I don't want to go back to work. How are you going to respond to that? You know, you can do that as well.
I think that's important. You're listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and my guest today is Marnie Feuerman, the marriage contributor at About.com. And we are talking today about the somehow unexpected changes that a baby creates for a marriage. And I kind of put that somehow because I think we all know it's just they sneak up on us. And so I want to talk about something, the spousal spurning that you talked about, because I think that this is a really big area that sends marriages down the tubes.
Yes. And I remember some of this. I think it's the scorekeeping that tends mm-hmm. to happen, because there is just a complete overload of work and tasks and things that are, you know, may even seem menial, you know.
Right.
There's small things like, you know, emptying the diaper thing, you know, trash, just changing diapers, folding clothes, doing what. Like, there's all these things, and there's so much more of it. And so you start mm-hmm. to think, oh, I did 8 things. He only did 5. And you feel, like, thinking about it, you feel so stupid. But it's because there is just so much to do. There's sleep deprivation, so you're mm-hmm. crankier. And so you're having a lot of fights over these little things and maybe snapping at each other.
Which then doesn't create a loving atmosphere to
right.
go, oh, yeah, let's go snuggle and have sex again.
Yeah, it does. It permeates a lot of different areas then of your relationship, and it erodes at it, unfortunately. And I think that does get better too. You know, I once you kind of get a routine, you get used to the workload, it gets a little better. But I think you know, if you're feeling that things are really out of balance, I would just, again, have a discussion about it and just, you know, bring it up sooner rather than later. And
don't
I
let
think,
it fester. Yeah.
Right. And sometimes, you know, and this sounds so small, but I even remember I would get a little whiny, you know, like, why, you know, I need you to do this, or can you take them to the potty now? Or,
mm-hmm.
and then my husband's like, well, if you need help, all you have to do is ask me, you know, and I was getting
ooh,
like whiny
yeah.
almost as a way to be like thinking that was the only way I was going to get it done. Or that
right.
to get him to do it.
As opposed to just say, honey,
can
take
you
Sam to the bathroom now.
Yeah, or can you please do this time? Or
right.
can you please empty the dishwasher now? Or,
right.
And I'm like, it was almost like a light bulb went off. Like, it's okay to just ask. You know, hopefully you have a partner that is open to that and willing and knows that, okay, there's so much more of a workload, and you just got to ask each other and ask nicely and remember please and thank yous and all those things that we tend to forget.
And I do think that it's critical. There are two points that I want to make. It's critical that people sit down before the baby comes and recognizes there's another person in the house who for several years isn't going to be able to do things for themselves. So what are we taking off the table? Because we don't get any more time when the babies come home with us. We still only have 24 hours a day. So what is it that's okay not to do anymore? And I think that's a really important conversation to have. But the second one that I wanted to talk about, because I can hear people screaming, why should I have to ask my partner for help? Why don't they just know?
Well, mind reading doesn't usually work well. I think I can understand that frustration. Right. I mean, I understand the frustration if it keeps happening. Like if you have to keep asking the same thing over and over, and then maybe it's okay, we need to have a sit down heart to heart talk. But I do think that sometimes we're just not thinking about that thing, and we're not thinking, oh, this, I need to go clean this off right now, or I need to go change a diaper, or I need to smell the butt to see if it needs change, or like that's just not where our minds are all the time. Particularly for maybe more so for women, we're thinking about more of those things. If you're more of a traditional stay-at-home mom and your husband's at work all day, this isn't in his. These aren't thoughts that keep rolling around in his mind every day.
Right.
So on
I talked about the fear of influence.
Yeah. So he's home on the weekend or something, and so you're having to ask a lot, and that could be frustrating. But I would say, just keep it in perspective. If you ask, and your spouse says, "Okay, fine," and does it, I would say that's good. You should be happy that it just gets accomplished. And then you can always say something like, hey, maybe you could be a little more aware of this stuff when you're home.
Right.
That these things just constantly need to be done. So.
Yeah, it was funny because I remember one of my friends had a baby before I did, and my husband and I were visiting, and she and I and her sister went out to get lunch. And when we came home, I mean, I could smell the baby almost before I walked in the house. We walk in the house and the husband hands my friend the baby and says, "Here." And on the drive home, I looked at my husband and I said, "You are never, ever to do that to me."
That's pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, my gosh, that still happens, But
right.
And I also think it's really important, and I was talking about this before, about talking about dividing up who's going to do what with the child, because I think that then puts the baby on and the baby's needs on both people's radar screens, that if, my husband did the diaper pail, and he actually ended up doing most of the baths because I worked in the evenings. So we kind of had this nice split. I fed the baby, I did the laundry, he did all this other stuff. And I think that was to actually sit down and go, okay, who's going to do this? And I know that sometimes moms have a hesitation.
Control freaks.
Your work, not mine, Marmy.
Not that, yeah.
But to actually let the dads really take care of the child.
Yeah, I do see that more. And I saw it in myself, and I had to remind myself that as long as the baby is safe,
yes.
You know what? Leave it alone. If they don't wash the baby perfectly, if the clothes are unmatched, or does that really matter? Is that going to harm the baby? So that was kind of, that's a good sort of maybe threshold or standard you want to go by, because I think if it's not going to do harm, I think some of those things we're better off just letting it go and not saying anything for the sake of peace and the relationship. And I think people sometimes really have to make the effort to do that.
Right. And the relationship, and I have to laugh because every time I think about this, I keep thinking, okay, did you ever have a baby, which for most OBGYNs, the answer is no, because many of them are still men. But this idea that after your six-week checkup, that you get this all clear, okay, go and have sex, and you're thinking, are you kidding me?
Right.
I don't ever want to have sex again.
Right.
Which, of course, my husband was not real fond of that particular thing. And I remember I was actually asking this very same friend with the diaper thing. I said to her after my son was 6 months old, and I said to her, I said, will I ever want sex again? And she goes, yeah, once you stop breastfeeding, everything will be fine. And, you know, but that's a real problem.
Yeah,
for many marriages.
Yes, I think just between the way your body feels and just your sleep deprivation. So yeah, it zaps your drive, and that does create a lot of conflict, you know, in the relationship because you know, men they just don't feel the same way, and they still have those needs. That didn't change.
Right.
That really
right.
didn't change when the baby came.
Right.
So that's a tough thing, and I would say you've got to be open about how you feel, but I think you also have to realize that you've got to make some efforts in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's not intercourse necessarily, but you're still doing other things that are
right.
romantic and affectionate. You're still remembering to do that, and then you'll find your way back in that direction.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it does take a little while, and I think it also does depend on whether or not you're breastfeeding. I think if you are breastfeeding, that's going to stretch it out probably longer for a woman.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's important to stay connected and still do things as a couple, which I know can be really, really hard because most of us don't want to leave our 6 weeks old or 3 month old with, 14-year-old Susie down the street who
right.
just got her
right.
Red Cross babysitting certificate.
Right.
So it's really making sure that we are able as a couple to still spend some quality time together. Marnie, I wanted to ask you about the boundary blow-ups because I think that's another critical piece that people need to think about when they're adding
yes.
a baby to the family. So what did you mean by that?
I think it can become more of a challenge to deal with, in-laws and extended family members. People sometimes want to spend even more time with you or with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I remember situations where it just got challenging when in-laws want to spend time with the grandkids, and I totally understand that, but your time is so limited. Like you said, you want time with each other. You
mm-hmm.
still want to hang out with your friends, and some
right.
of those friends had babies too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whether it's time or it's in-laws or extended family, maybe even your own mom, is saying, why are you breastfeeding?
Right.
Or criticizing or saying,
or whatever, yeah.
Right, you should do this, you should do that. Almost sometimes even saying things as if they're a pediatrician,
right.
directing you with what to do. And that can be tough. It's tough whether it's your own parents or your spouse's
your in-laws.
Parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think you've got to come together as a team, with your spouse and discuss it and say, how are we going to handle this? How can we start setting some boundaries? And, how do we want our family unit to look? And how do we want
uh-huh.
these other people to sort of come and go, crossing the boundary here that we set? So I think you really have to talk about that, not make assumptions and...
right.
Just come together on it. I think that'll be much easier if it's the two of you who both say, all right, this is how we want it to be. Every Saturday, morning, we don't want anyone around or whatever
right.
it is, whatever rules you decide for yourself.
And that can be tough because I know in my case, I tell people I hit the in-law jackpot. My in-laws were great, even though they didn't always agree with what my husband and I wanted to do. They never bucked us. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say they followed the rules completely when the kids were visiting them and my husband and I were nowhere around. Of course, they spoiled the kids a little bit.
Right.
But for the most part, they followed our rules. And I know that sometimes that doesn't happen. I mean, even in my own family, I've seen it with in-laws where, you know, the parents don't want the kids eating certain things, or they want them to not watch certain kinds of movies, or they want them to, you know, go to bed at a certain time, and the in-laws don't necessarily support that.
Right.
And
right.
And I know that kind of comes into one of the other things you had was the cultural differences, because that's mm-hmm. also could come into play as you're trying to figure out what boundaries to set up.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, you have to realize you might be disappointing these people because you're not doing what they want to do.
Right.
But I would say for the sake of your marriage, I mean, your marriage has to be first, and whatever the two of you decide, you know, other people may not like it or agree with it, but I think you've got to set that up pretty early. You want to set the precedent for how you're mm-hmm. going to handle these things. Otherwise, it just gets more and more difficult. And I know it can range from being minor, and some people have fantastic in-laws that are very helpful and they're really mm-hmm. lucky. And then there's some situations where, you know, when mother-in-law's around, she has to comment on every single little thing. I mean, and it just goes everything
right.
in between. So if it's, you know, really affecting you and it's affecting your relationship, I'd say you've really got to do something to handle it and not avoid or think it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But that's tough. But I think that's also sort of that sign that we're full-blown adults here. Like, we have kids
right.
of our own, and sometimes we have to confront the parents.
They are our kids, not your kids. They're our kids.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So, down and dirty, what would be the biggest piece of advice that you would tell expectant parents about how to prepare for what they can't really prepare for?
That's a tough one. Wow, that's big.
Yeah, it is.
I would say if you are willing to do maybe even a program, there's great stuff out there online.
Mm-hmm.
There's things available, you know, webinars and podcasts and or even going to a therapist for a little while, just for some counseling, for someone to guide you, because bringing home a baby, and I think even John Gottman has a very good program too called Bringing
uh-huh.
Baby Home. I want to say that it's called that, but
uh-huh.
So there are programs available, and I would say if a couple takes advantage of that, I think that would be fantastic. This way you're not missing anything. I mean, they have a protocol that kind of goes through all of this stuff that we're talking about and more.
Uh-huh.
So I think that would probably be my best suggestion. But otherwise, I would say make sure that your relationship is really solid, that the two of you are really connected, you're very open about things with each other and communicating, and I would say keep that going. That shouldn't change because there's a new baby. You just may be doing, it may be more challenging, and you're having to bring up more
right.
Things that are difficult,
uh-huh.
But I would say that would be the best advice, is just make sure that the two of you are really solid.
Well, yes, and I'm going to agree with you 100%, because I'm a big believer that your marriage needs to be on solid footing before you introduce the disruptive impact of children.
And yes.
I personally think that a couple needs at least 2 years of foundation building before they get pregnant, because if they haven't worked out the kinks in the marriage before the baby, that baby can widen any cracks that are already there.
Yes.
And I don't think it's ever too late. I mean, even I was lucky. I waited almost 7 years, my husband and I were married, before we had our child, so we had a good, strong foundation. And I don't think that it's ever too late, even if you got pregnant within the first year, because making the time to get your marriage strong really is the best gift you can ever give your children.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
So, Marnie Feuerman, thank you for talking with me. She's the marriage contributor at about.com, and you can also find both Marnie and me at yourtango.com. And join me next week when my guest will be Dr. Bill Doherty, and we're going to be talking about how you can be or find a marital first responder. So until then, stay loving.